And you can check out the full range of these programs on satsanglive.com.au. So I just wanted to finish by letting you know two great programs that are coming up in the next week, in fact. The Golden 11 Yoga Course starts this Wednesday, September the 2nd, and is available live or on demand. It's taught by Nataraj Chaitanya, who is a great yoga teacher. This is a five-week study of Guruji's Golden 11 series, which is based on his time spent studying and practicing with the famous Hatha yogi Haridas Baba. And it will help you establish a home practice and prepare the body for meditation. So if you're feeling a bit bored at home, what better way to spend your time? Also, a very special event coming up on Sunday, the 13th of September, from 10 to 1 p.m. It's an online intensive called the Supreme Shakti. And this is when Swamiji gives Shaktipat, which in this tradition is given either by look, touch, thought, or word. So rest assured, the enlivening power can be transmitted online. We did one of these intensives a few months back, and it was an absolutely fantastic day. So don't miss the opportunity. And you can register for either course at satsanglive.com.au.
So now we're going to do the Mrityunjaya Mantra. And this is a very powerful, slightly complicated mantra from the Vedas, from the Rudram, actually. And we're doing that in honor of Judy, a long-time devotee who used to attend for many years, also known as Ganga, who passed away last night, I guess. And she's the grandmother of Baladev here. And she's a very good yogini, so we're going to do that to send her soul to Siddhaloka. So we'll do 27 mantras. If you have never done it before, just try to follow along, get the hang of it. Very powerful. Begin with Gajananam.
Yeah.
Kumbakam Yajamahe Sukhandam Pushivaranam Varakameva Bandhana Yomiksi Amamrita. Om Trayambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushivaranam Varakameva Bandhana Yomiksi Amamrita. Kanyajamahe Sugandhim Pushivaranam Varakameva Bandhana Yomiksi Amamrita. Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushivaranam Varakameva Bandhana Yomiksi Amamrita. Om Trayambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushivaranam Varakameva Bandhana Yomiksi Amamrita. Om Trayambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushivaranam Varakameva Bandhana Yomiksi Amamrita. Trayambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushivaranam Varakameva Bandhana Yomiksi Amamrita. Trayambakamidamaye Sugandhim Pushivaranam Varakameva Bandhana Yomiksi Amamrita. Sugandhim Pushivaranam Varakameva Bandhana Yomiksi Amamrita. Om Trayambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushivaranam Varakameva Bandhana Yomiksi Amamrita. Om Shanti Shanti.
Shanti Sadhguna Maharaj Ki Jai. Om Shakti Om Shakti Om Shakti Om. Om Shakti Om Shakti Om Shakti Om. Om Shakti Om Shakti Om Shakti Om.
Welcome everyone to tonight's program. I always like to begin programs by remembering Baba, who began all of his programs by saying in Hindi, Sabko Barisan Mani Ke Saat Prem Se Hardik Swagat. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And he would always say that that's the essence of spirituality, to welcome another person with love. And as Lilavati said, we're having an intensive on the Kundalini Shakti in a couple of weeks. And of course, that was the essence of Baba's mission, to awaken the Kundalini Shakti in so many people, thousands of people around the world. And he always told me to hold intensives. Told me all the time. So it's always a great event when we hold the intensive. Baba said, speaking of Kundalini, this divine power that creates the universe, that sets the wheels of energy into motion, dwells within each of us. And that is the Kundalini energy, hidden within us. He says, yet we are unacquainted with her. Even though our worth is great, we are divine beings, we do not experience our divinity. We do not realize our true value. As long as the Shakti remains dormant, that's the Kundalini energy, this hidden potential within every person. As long as we do not directly experience her, we shall not be able to overcome our suffering. What must occur is self-recognition. In Shaivism, they talk about the school of Pratibhijna, or self-recognition. It's not something we don't know, we just haven't recognized it. And the awakening that the Guru gives helps us to understand who we actually are. Baba says, the Kundalini Shakti, who creates the universe from her own substance, who creates the human body out of her own being, dwells within us, and it is our important duty to activate her. So that's the purpose of the intensive, and it's also the purpose of human life. So come along to that. Tonight, of course, in all these programs, I celebrate the great beings, the ones who attained the goal, whose Kundalini was awake. Not only was it awake, but they completed the long journey from the base of the spine to the top of the head, one way to describe it, spiritual attainment. And because they accomplished that journey, so they help us accomplish that journey. There are many tools that we have in journeying from ignorance to light. We have spiritual practices, we have rituals, we have mantras, we have meditation, we have work, seva in the ashram and all that. But the greatest tool that we have is the living embodiment of that truth, the great beings. So in these programs, I always celebrate the teachings of the great beings. And tonight, the great being that we're going to celebrate and have satsang with is somebody that I met in Mumbai. Bombay it was then, now it's Mumbai. And he lived a very humble life in the city, but he was a great jnani. And he was Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, who was a humble seller of cigarettes. He ran several cigarette stalls, as you'll hear in the dialogue tonight. And just lived a kind of middle-class existence in a very humble part of Mumbai, but this fire, this thirst for divinity came upon him. And he searched for someone to teach him, and he met a guru, and he practiced assiduously the guru's teaching, and he attained the goal. And then people started becoming attracted to him, and he gave dialogues every night, teachings about the self. What else do you have? Fulka. So that's Maharaj. In the room that I met him, he would give satsang every night there in his little home in Mumbai, and it'd be jammed with 30 to 50 people and all drinking in his wisdom. And this is one of those dialogues. Nice photo, no? He's very emphatic and humorous in his teaching. So, dialogue with Nasagadatta Maharaj. And as time went on, his reputation grew, and people were drawn from everywhere. When I got to India, there was a considerable spiritual grapevine. And if you just went to the center of town, there'd be some traveler, Western traveler, who'd come from Europe or from America or from Australia. And they were all on the spiritual circuit. Some of them were on other kinds of circuits, but some of them were also on the spiritual circuit. And they traveled around and they met various sages. And you could hear about who you can meet, who's around. And that's where I first heard of Baba. And when I first heard of Baba, I thought, bing, nice. I'd like to say I knew immediately as soon as I heard the word Muktananda, but it would be untrue. However, if Trump gets reelected, I will claim that. Questioner. That's an enigmatic statement, isn't it? Questioner. On all sides, I hear that freedom from desires and inclinations is the first condition of self-realization. But I find the condition impossible of fulfillment. Ignorance of oneself causes desires, and desires perpetuate ignorance, a truly vicious circle. So it's a typical beginning yogi's complaint, trying to stop their thoughts, trying to stop their desires, struggling for the first time with their inner being, trying to get some purchase there, trying to control it. And then when you start to turn within and you start to examine, you're amazed by the proliferation of ignorant and unpleasant movements that happen inside. It's just amazing. When you're not paying attention to it, it doesn't seem as bad, but as soon as you start, you get assailed by it. But Maharaj says, in fact, there are no conditions to fulfill. In fact, there's nothing to be done and nothing to be given up. Isn't that nice? That's what the yanis say. It's all within, it's already within. So what is there to do? Aye, there's the rub. That's the catch 22. Even though there's nothing to do, you have to work damn hard to not do it. So he says, Maharaj says, nothing to be done. He says, just look and remember. If you just shut up after the first sentence, nothing to do, we'd be all right. But just look and remember. Then he piles it on. Do not identify with that which you perceive. You are not the contents of the field of consciousness, but the conscious knower itself. In other words, we're not the content, but we are the one that sees it all. We're the whole of our awareness, the container of the whole awareness. Maharaj says, it is your belief that you have to make spiritual efforts to achieve the goal. Efforts must be made, but it is an effort of awareness. Simply look at whatever happens and understand that you are beyond it as the witnessing consciousness. So is it an effort or not? It's very paradoxical. That's why Zen, for example, is so full of paradox. Because on the one hand, we are complete as we are. And the self is perfect within us. On the other hand, you have to work very hard to discriminate, to understand, and to connect with it. But he says it's an effort of awareness. It's an effort of where we put our awareness. Question, does it mean I should abstain from doing anything? Maharaj, you cannot. What goes on must go on. If you stop suddenly, you will crash. Question. So now the question is all confused. What exactly are you saying? You say I don't have to do anything, then you say I have to do something, then I say, well, what should I do? And well, is it this? It is a theory. Question, is it a matter of the known and the knower becoming one? The known and the knower becoming one. So this person's read spiritual books, and he knows that there's the knower and the known and the means of knowledge. All the yogis talk about this threesome, this trinity. Maharaj dismisses it. Both are ideas in the mind and words that express them. There is no self in them. The self is neither between nor beyond. To look for it on the mental level is futile. So actually saying, you're just conceptualizing, you're just making up theories, this is not the real thing. Stop searching and see, it is here and now. It is the I am that you know so well. And that was the sadhana that Maharaj taught, to just dwell on the I am. And that was the sadhana that he'd been given, the practice he'd been given by his guru. His guru told him, just contemplate I am. And that's a complete sadhana. If you were to do that, as he did with a lot of intensity, it would start to reveal, what is this I am? Well, what is I am? You don't just keep saying, I am, I am, I am, I am. Like Popeye, I am, I am. But you see, what is it that you am? It's trivial. We all know we are, and we always say, I am. But what is it really pointing towards? What experience, what feeling does those words point to? And contemplating that, then we discover eventually who we are. He says, all you need to do is to cease taking yourself to be within the field of consciousness. You are consciousness itself. You are consciousness itself. You look around the room, you see objects and people, but actually it's all your own consciousness containing those objects and people. Isn't that true? So shift from being this person over here and everything's over there, to I am this overriding consciousness. That's who I actually am. I'm the overriding consciousness, which is always there. It's a container that's filled with different things according to circumstance. But that's who we really are, is what he's saying, this awareness. He says, unless you've already considered these matters carefully, listening to me once will not do it. So now he's giving away some more secrets. You can't just not say, you don't have to do anything. You have to hear it again and again and again, and you have to keep coming back and listening to that teaching. Forget your past experience and achievements. Stand naked, exposed to the winds and rains of life, and you will succeed. What does he mean by that? Give up all your concepts, give up all your theories about spirituality and about who you are and about what the world is and what the meaning is. Give up all your ideas, your social ideas, your political ideas, and your spiritual ideas, and your ideas about yourself. And just be here, naked and exposed like a madman right now. Just crazy. Make a separation between your past, all your identities, and just be radically here, shining bright like right now. Crazy, because you don't know who you are, you're just here. Just luminous intelligence being here. Yeah? So, question. So he often rises to kind of poetic statement, and then immediately when that happens, the question has changed the subject, because it's taking them somewhere and they get uncomfortable. And he says, question, has devotion any place in your teaching? Bhakti, devotion. So normally you see the Bhagavad Gita talks about several types of yoga. It talks about devotion, bhakti yoga. It talks about karma yoga. It talks about jnana yoga. Karma yoga is the yoga of work and service. And jnana yoga is the yoga of intellect. So there are various yogas according to your particular characteristic. You appreciate one or more than the other. So he's saying, well, you seem to be a jnani. You seem to emphasize insight, intellect, insight. Is devotion part of it? And Maharaj says, he tells you what his understanding of devotion. He says, when you're not well, you go to a physician who tells you what's wrong and what is the remedy. If you have confidence in him, it makes things simple. You take the medicine, follow the diet restrictions, and get well. This is bhakti yoga. So what's the bhakti part of it? You have confidence in the doctor. And because you have the feeling for the doctor, then you do the regime. But you may not have that feeling for the doctor. But Maharaj says, but if you do not trust him, you may still take a chance on his remedy. Or you may do research about your ailment. In these cases, it's your desire for recovery that moves you, not the physician. You're not inspired by the physician, but you want to get well. So you do, especially this, you search, you Google it, right? You Google the disease, then you start self-prescribing, self-medicating. He says, this is Raja Yoga or Jnana Yoga. This is not, you're not focused on the person of the doctor, but you're focused on the path, the method. Maharaj says, trust is very powerful. Without trust, there is no peace. You always trust somebody or other. It may be your mother or your wife. Of all the people, the knower of the self, the liberated person, is the most trustworthy. So truly, you know, in spirituality, it's where we place our trust. That's very important. And this is devotion. If you trust the guru, it's a great thing. If you trust the mantra, that's a great thing. If you trust the practice, that's a great thing. If you trust the philosophy, so where is your trust? But he goes on. But merely to trust is not enough. You must also desire. Without desire for freedom, of what use is the confidence that you can acquire freedom? Desire and faith must go together. So this is the exception to desire being harmful. The desire for the divine is in alignment with your purpose. A desire for lesser things is against your spiritual purpose, or can be against it. But the desire for the divine is in line with it. He says, the stronger your desire, the easier comes the help. The greatest guru is helpless as long as the disciple is not eager to learn. And this is what Baba would say, disciple's grace, more important. Guru's grace is always there. Disciple's grace means you become coachable. You're open to the teaching. You don't argue with everything or resist everything, but you're open to it. And that's called, in the yogic tradition, mumukshutva, that a desire for liberation. It's a tremendous attribute of a seeker, a real desire for liberation. And just that alone will carry you to the goal. If you have a real yearning, that it's a burning desire to know the self and to attain the goal. And that desire eclipses all lesser desires. When you have that, then there's nothing can stop you. He says, eagerness and earnestness are all important. Maharaj always talked about earnestness. It means mumukshutva, this desire to attain the goal. Maharaj says, faith grows with experience. Be devoted to the goal, and devotion to him who can guide you will follow. If your desire and faith are strong, they will operate and take you to the goal, for you will not cause delay by hesitation and compromise. There are so many ways that we slow ourselves down on the path. So many different problems, so many issues that arise. Maharaj says, the guru already lives within you as your inner self. Truly, he is the supreme teacher. I've seen it described as that at first we don't know the self, we don't know the guru, completely awake, or asleep to it. And then the self takes the form of the guru and comes to you, and then that guru awakens you to the guru within yourself, and then helps guide you to get in touch with that. That's one way of describing the process. He says, so the guru is the ultimate, the self is the ultimate guru. The self accompanies you on your journey and takes you to the goal. He meets you at the end of the road. Have faith in the self. But again, there must be a strong desire to find the truth. And also you must do nothing that creates obstacles and delays. Have you ever done anything that created obstacles and delays in your spiritual process? Don't answer. It's just a matter of not doing too much that creates obstacles and delays. Maharaj says, do not waste energy and time on regrets. Learn from your mistakes and do not repeat them. So if you make a mistake, because I remember what Nimkoli Baba told Ramdas. Ramdas said, you know, I'm afraid when I go back to the West that I'll fall spiritually. And Maharaj said, when you fall, get up. What could be more practical? So don't go on about how you made mistakes and you're a sinner and all that. Just keep moving forward. Get up and move forward. I learned a new word this week called scrupulosity. Vidya taught me that word, scrupulosity. It's like a condition of dwelling on the sins that you've committed, or you might commit. And it's a disease of very spiritual people, and they start brooding about it. And so what Narada would say, don't be so zealous and scrupulous. Get up and go forward and shut up about it. Let it go. Okay, question. Now here we get into something interesting. If you do not mind my asking a personal question, Maharaj, yes, go ahead. Question. I see you're sitting on an antelope skin. How does that tally with nonviolence? I remember this dialogue vividly because that really got my attention. He's sitting on, you know, because a lot of yogis sit on a leopard skin or whatever, you know. And Maharaj gives a unique and perhaps politically incorrect answer. My favorite kind. Question. All my working life, I was a cigarette maker, helping people to spoil their health. And in front of my door, the municipality has put up a public lavatory, spoiling my health. In this violent world, how can one keep away from violence of some kind or other? Question. He's not going to let him get away with that. Surely, all avoidable violence should be avoided, and yet in India, every holy man has his tiger, lion, leopard, or antelope skin to sit on. Maharaj gives another level of answer. He doesn't accept. Maharaj says, no plastics were available in ancient times, and a skin was best to keep the damp away. Rheumatism has no charm, even for a saint. Thus the tradition arose that for lengthy meditations, a skin is needed, just like the drum hide in a temple. So is the antelope skin of a yogi. We hardly notice it. Question. Excuse me, but the animal had to be killed. Maharaj, I've never heard of a yogi killing a tiger for his hide. The killers are not yogis and the yogis are not killers. But that's not a good answer, is it? I mean, you're complicit, aren't you? Question. Should you not express your disapproval by refusing to sit on the skin? And Maharaj now nails it. What an idea, he says. I disapprove of the entire universe. Why only a skin? It's all an illusion. Question, what's wrong with the universe? His Maharaj says, forgetting yourself is the greatest injury. All the calamities flow from it. Much worse than any of these details. Take care of the most important, the lesser will take care of itself. You do not tidy up a dark room, you open the windows first. Letting in the light makes everything easy. So let us wait with improving others until we have seen ourselves as we are and have changed. This is Maharaj's politics. It's instead of trying to adjust everything, because you can adjust it and it won't get you anywhere, so first know the self, then see what's there. There's no need to turn around and round in endless questioning. Find yourself and everything will fall into its proper place. Question. How are you going? Am I knocking you out with Maharaj? Still there? This is a fairly long dialogue. We may have to stop at some point, but anyway. Getting back, see, when Maharaj gets to a point like that, then he immediately changes subject. Getting back to the spiritual quest, sometimes I think that the outgoing mind is the natural mind, and to turn within may not only be difficult, but somehow unnatural. That's very interesting, because I remember having a very similar thought many years ago. And I thought, why is it so natural to focus outside and so difficult to turn within? Why is that? That must be, so how can it be to go against nature is the goal? I had thoughts like that. Maharaj says, outgoing mind is natural in the beginning. Ingoing mind is natural in the end. You have to learn how to turn within. You have to learn. It's not anything we ever learned. But in reality, the two are one, just like breathing in and out are one. They're very parallel, breathing in and out, breathing in to the inner world, breathing out to the outer world, turning the mind to the outer world, turning the mind to the inner world. These are parallel. Question, in the same way, are not the body and the self that dwells in the body one? Maharaj says, he's saying the self and the body, aren't they one? Maharaj says, events in time and space, birth and death, cause and effect, these may be taken as one, but the body and the self are not of the same order of reality. The body exists in time and space, transient and limited, while the self is timeless and spaceless, eternal and all-pervading. To identify the two is a grievous mistake and the cause of endless suffering. In fact, the school of philosophy that identified the body with the self were the Charvakas, the materialists. That means that the self is one with the body. The body dies, the self dies. That's what they felt. He says this is a grievous mistake. Perhaps the mind and body are one in some sense, but there's a deeper reality than the body-mind. That is the self. Question, is not the one who dwells in the body in control of the body and therefore responsible for it? Maharaj, there is a universal power which is in control and is responsible. Question, and so I can do as I like and put the blame on some universal power. How easy. This guy's quite philosophical, isn't he? Maharaj, yes, very easy. You simply need to realize the one mover behind all that moves and leave all to him. If you do not hesitate or cheat, this is the shortest way to reality. You get that? I'll say it again. You simply need to realize the one mover behind all that moves and leave all to him, saying God, or whatever you want to call it, the Shakti, the self, the guru, is creating everything. And I leave it all to him. I don't care. His will be done. It's called surrender. Let whatever happens, happens. We're so caught up in manipulating events and avoiding this and creating that, that we're full of tension all the time. But to live like that is just, okay, you're the boss, do it. And it doesn't mean you live without ambition or anything, because that will arise naturally and you'll do things, but it's in the flow of surrender. He said, if you do not hesitate or cheat, this is the shortest way to reality. So the path of surrender is the best way to the self, the shortest. Stand without desire and fear. So desire and fear. What is desire? I want things this way. What is fear? I don't want things like that. So you're constantly tense with that, wanting to have this or not have that. Standing without desire and fear, relinquishing all control and responsibility. He does everything. Sai Baba Shirdi used to say, God does it all. The fakir, God does everything. Questioner asked the right question here. Isn't that madness? Maharaj says, yes, divine madness. What is wrong with letting go the illusion of personal control and personal responsibility? Both are in the mind only. Of course, as long as you imagine yourself to be in control, you should also imagine yourself to be responsible. One implies the other. That's a very subtle and great point also. So, if you can't really just say, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, God does everything, and meanwhile you're actually manipulating events. That's not the goal. But if you actually can't relinquish control, it's too hard, then take responsibility, he's saying. Question, what I do not like in all this is taking refuge in some universal power. Maharaj, you cannot quarrel with facts. Question, whose facts, yours or mine? With any other teacher, he would seem quite rude, but this is what Maharaj liked. Maharaj liked a full-on, full-bodied conversation. He liked an argument, actually, the way he was. Whose facts, yours or mine? Maharaj says, yours. You cannot deny my facts, for you do not know them. So what's a fact for Maharaj? What's his experience? Could you know them, you would not deny them. Here lies the trouble. You take your imagining for facts and my facts for imagination. You can't out-fax the guy. I know for certain that all is one. Differences do not separate. he stands in the position that everything is part and parcel of the one consciousness. He knows that in his bones. And the fact that there's different things doesn't make them separate. Should we go on? I got a little bit more. Should we continue? Should we finish this, David Ma? Should we go on? That's good, let's do it. Question, still, you're limited by your body, Maharaj, only in matters pertaining to the body. That's a very good point too. You're limited to the body. I mean, you can't high jump 8 feet and you can't live for 200 years. But you're not limited, doesn't limit your soul. This I do not mind, he says. It is like enduring the seasons of the year. They come, they go, they hardly affect me. In the same way, body minds come and go. Life is forever in search of new expressions. And we're coming up to Australian springtime. Very long, arduous winter we've had. And on the 1st of September, they in Australia, they say that it's spring. Of course, we know it's not spring until 21st. But in Australia, they can't remember that. So they say it's the 1st. But see, I like it. I like it when spring comes because it comes much earlier. That's good. But I don't like it when, what's the opposite? Autumn comes because that means summer ends too early. So they should do the 21st on the other side. Never mind. You had to be here. Question, there may be a God for all I know, but to me he's a concept projected by the human mind. He may be a reality to you, but to me society is more real than God, for I am both its creature and its prisoner. Your values are wisdom and compassion. Society's values are sagacious selfishness. I live in a world quite different from yours. So, you know, the spiritual person is very different from the society's values. None compels you, but I am compelled. This is the question of still complaining. My world is an evil world, full of tears, toil, and pain. To explain it away by intellectualizing, by putting forth theories of evolution and karma, is merely adding insult to injury. The God of an evil world is a cruel God. Now his big protest. What can Maharaj say to that? The God of the last 4 months is a very cruel God. No. Maharaj is equal to the task. Maharaj says, you are the God of your world, and you are both stupid and cruel. Let God be a concept, your own creation. Find out who you are. How did you come to live longing for truth, goodness, and beauty in a world full of evil? Wow, that's wonderful. How did you get into a world full of all the injustice and inequality and cruelty that we see? And you're a creature that means well and wants to know the truth, know God. And there you live in a world like that. What a monster fuck up. So figure it out. What use is your arguing for or against God when you simply do not know who God is and what you're talking about? The God born of fear and hope, shaped by desire and imagination, cannot be the power that is the mind and the heart of the universe. So God is the power that's the mind and the heart of the universe. Imagine that, the power that beats at the center of the universe and shapes it. This is God. That's not the same as the one we create out of our fear and longing. Beautiful. Question. I agree that the world I live in and the God I believe in are both creatures of imagination. But in what way are they created by desire? Why do I imagine a world so painful for a God so indifferent? What is wrong with me that I should torture myself so cruelly? Well, you see, Maharaj's got him to thinking about himself. That's good. The enlightened man comes and tells me, and this is the peculiar cry of the heart now. Maharaj's got him to his ultimate, the complaint. The complaint of the peculiar is heard in the land. The enlightened man comes and tells me it is but a dream to put an end to. But is he not himself a part of the dream? I find myself trapped and see no way out. You say you are free. Of what are you free? For heaven's sake, don't feed me on words. Enlighten me. Help me to wake up, since it is you who sees me tossing in my sleep. But it's good, because you see, what, from philosophical argument, he's come to look at his own predicament. And now he's crying to the guru, help me, you know. And Maharaj says, when I say I'm free, I merely state a fact. If you're an adult, you're free from infancy. I'm free from all, in other words, that's a fact. You know, if you say, I'm not an infant, you don't, that's not anything contrary. That's what you're not an infant. I'm free from all description and identification. Whatever you may see, hear, think of, I am not that. I'm free from being a percept or a concept. I'm nothing you can see or think. Question, still you have a body and you depend on it. Maharaj, again, you assume your point of view is the only correct one. I repeat, I was not, am not, shall not be a body. To me, this is a fact. He's saying that, this is his reality. He doesn't identify with it. He identifies with consciousness. I too was under the illusion of having been born, but my guru made me see that birth and death are mere ideas. Birth is merely the idea I have a body, and death, I've lost my body. Now when I know I'm not the body may be there or may not. What difference does it make? Sometimes the body's there, that's called birth. Sometimes the body's gone, that's called death. Then the new body comes. The body-mind is like a room. It is there, but I need not live in it all the time. Question, yet there is a body and you do take care of it. Maharaj, you take care of your house and your automobile, but you don't think that they are you. Maharaj says, there are two levels to consider, the physical world of facts and the mental world of ideas. I am beyond both. Neither your facts nor ideas are mine. What I see is beyond. Cross over to my side and see with me. Come over here and see from my point of view. I'm not my mind or my body. I am here, he says. Come in, but you don't. You want me to live your life, feel your way, use your language. I cannot, and it will not help you. You must come to me. It's really beautiful. I've gotten to a place where Maharaj is speaking so beautifully here. Words are of the mind, and the mind obscures and distorts. Hence the absolute need to go beyond words. Move over to my side. See directly what I'm saying. Maharaj, I question it. Take me over. Maharaj says, I'm doing it, but you resist. You give reality to concepts, while concepts are distortions of reality. Abandon all conceptualization and stay silent and attentive. Be earnest about it, and all will be well with you. There's enough teachings there for the rest of your life, I'd say. It's a great dialogue, huh? Very beautiful. What do you hear in that? I hear that it's time to meditate. And we'll meditate on the self. And so let's do what Maharaj says. For 10 minutes, you have a choice. You can either do his radical surrender, where you just are completely naked and alone, no history. You just are. And you let whatever arise, arise. Whatever thoughts come in, whatever feelings come up, you let them come. And you let them go. And you put your trust in that higher power. Or you can focus on the self and explore that I am and see how far deep into that I am till the words I am disappear and only the experience of I am is left. So for 10 minutes, let's practice meditation on the self. Once again, with great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. Satguru Nanak Maharaj Ki Jai.
Hi, everyone. If you enjoyed this podcast, why not check out Swamiji's latest book, Ganesh Pridays, Memoirs of a Western Yogi. It's about the time he spent in India with his guru, Baba Muktananda, in the 1970s, and it's a great read. To get a copy, go to ganeshpridays.com. That's G-A-N. ESHPURI days.com. Wherever you are in the world, you can get the book on Kindle or printed in your own country.